From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. It's still a volatile time for higher education. This year, the Trump administration has frozen or canceled billions of dollars in funding for research. It's also attempted to restrict enrollment of international students. And it also asked schools to sign on to a so-called compact, demanding tuition freezes, removal of race and sex as considerations in hiring and in admissions. And in exchange, those schools would get easier access to federal funds, the administration says. What does all this mean for smaller institutions? Augustana College in the Quad Cities has been one of many schools confronting those issues. As of this fall, it serves about 2,500 students. Andrea Talentino has been its president since 2022. She's only the ninth person to serve in that role in more than 160 years. She grew up in New York, earned a bachelor's degree in political science at Yale University, advanced degrees at UCLA, and she had previous stints in administration in Vermont and Rochester, New York. On Wednesday, we sat down with Dr. Talentino in another installment of our series of conversations with college and university leaders across the 21st state. Because the program's on tape, we're not taking calls live, but we'll be sharing messages from our texting group we received earlier this week. If you want to join for opportunities to participate in future conversations, you can do that by sending the word TALK to 217-803-0730. That's TALK, T-A-L-K, to 217-803-0730. One additional note, our partner station, WVIK, in the Quad Cities, is licensed to Augustana College, but as ever, university leadership has no role in our journalism. Dr. Andrea Talentino, welcome to the 21st Show.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
So we've talked with the leaders of other colleges and universities about enrollment, as a lot of schools have seen declines in their student populations. But over the past 20 years, Augustana has grown quite a bit, from about 2,300 students in the fall 2004 to 2,550 this fall. To what do you attribute that growth?
Well, a couple things. Number one, our admissions folks are really strategic and thoughtful about how they go about their work. So we've done a number of things like adding counselors who speak things other than English, working with community-based organizations, thinking really carefully about how we and what geographic areas we work in and how we connect there. So that's one part of it. But then the other big piece is that institutionally, I think we've been really thoughtful about how we kind of meet the changing moment, as it were. And so we've added programs like kinesiology and engineering. Those are two of our fastest growing programs. We've also added co-curricular things like sports. So we've added women's wrestling. We've added men's and women's water polo. Those are things that we know are bringing students to us that probably would have gone somewhere else because they're looking for that thing specifically. And so if we don't have it, they wouldn't necessarily come here. But I think that combination of things and really looking across everything from how we recruit students and where we recruit students to the things we recruit them for, I think that's been super important. And then the last piece I'll say is this, just that we've had a very, very steady focus on outcomes for students. And so certainly over the last couple of decades, one of the things Augustana has done is made sure that we're laser focused on ensuring that students have outcomes that lead them to successful professional and personal arcs. And I think we've been able to show that well. So, you know, across all those three things, it's been helpful for us to be compelling and distinctive to students.
You mentioned recruitment, and that's an interesting, maybe a difference for a private school like Augustana, small liberal arts, as opposed to, U of I or an Illinois State or some of the schools whose sort of reputations precede them. Talk about that and what the particular factors are for Augustana there.
Sure. Well, one of the things I think that is helpful is we're ranked in the top 100 of liberal arts colleges nationwide. So that is one place where if a student isn't from the Midwest or doesn't know much about us, if they look onto that ranking, they can get information. But I think the other thing is really thinking carefully about how we present ourselves to students and what we're showing them that shows that we're a compelling choice. And I think we have a couple of things going for us. It's all hard work, right? But there's a couple things. Number one is that we're able to show high levels of rigor. but also paired with lots of opportunities for students. And I think this is one of the areas that we have a leg up in that can be harder for much larger schools, that we have a lot of easy ways and easy pathways for students to get involved in really high quality, engaged, often project-based learning, working closely with faculty, closely with staff in ways that they might not be able to at a larger school. We also have a lot of sort of specialized programming in terms of student research opportunities, faculty projects that are going on. I mean, just as an example, one of our faculty runs an audiology clinic that students are able to work in, even as undergraduates. We had students who were working with the city of Rock Island, which is where we're based, to figure out lead pipe remediation for the city and working with the city council directly to help come up with plans for how to do that. So we're able to create some ways for students to really see how they can make a difference and how they can be involved from day one. And I know that in terms of our recruitment, that's something that admissions is always really focusing on. The other thing I think that we really emphasize in our recruitment is the combination of high quality athletics and high quality academics. We have high standards in both. We are number 14 in academic All-Americans across the nation. That's schools of all divisions and all sizes and shapes. And so we, that's something we are really proud of and talk a lot about, that students are going to be able to excel in both places if they come here, and there'll be people to help them excel in both places if they come here.
International students make up a substantial share of Augustana's overall enrollment. I wonder how the geopolitical climate has affected that for you.
Yeah, that is a great question. So international students are about 20% of our student body. That was a kind of conscious decision that was made some years before I arrived to recruit more international students, both in terms of thinking about the decline in numbers of domestic students that was looming, but also as a way to ensure that we're living out our mission to prepare people to live in a world of difference and know how to work across difference and work with others and be aware of the world. So we now have that 20%. And I will say, up until now, we have not felt significantly affected. We did last spring have a handful of students who were impacted by some of the changes in visa status that were happening, we saw across the nation. But what we are seeing now for recruitment for students who would be entering next year is certainly a decline in interest and willingness to come to the United States. Our international recruiters have been traveling the globe literally over the last month or two, and they're definitely seeing a change in folks' perspectives on the United States in studying in the US. We're being told by some of our research partners that nationally there's about a 22% decline in terms of international interest in the United States. And so we're certainly seeing that. Our numbers of international recruits for next year are softer than they have been in the last few years. And so we'll just sort of see how that plays out. One of our advantages is that we have never recruited from any single country. We have about 33, 34 different countries represented on campus. And so depending where prospective students may be from, it may be hit them a little differently. But we definitely are seeing more softness in that demand for U.S. education.
Because of some of the immigration enforcement actions of the administration, this has been a fraught time for people, not just who are on, visas and have legal status. I guess even U.S. citizens have been caught up in this. We've had listeners ask how, what universities in particular are doing to support international students at this time of potential peril.
Yeah. And it's everything, right? It's the immigration crackdowns, it's difficulties in getting visas, it's limitations on students being able to work in the United States after graduation. So it's a whole host of things. There's no easy way to support international students because there's no easy way to be able to say, hey, nothing will affect you, or, we can completely solve it if it does. What we've really focused on is number one, being able to, making sure that international students are well informed of the changes that we're seeing in the federal landscape. Number two, that they're well informed of the changes we're seeing in terms of enforcement. That's been one of the biggest issues, particularly in terms of immigration. Number three, that they have access to high quality advice on that. So, one of the things we did this fall was bring in an immigration legal specialist who was able to talk directly to students and address some of their concerns. And then the other thing that we're able to do, and this is something that we can certainly impact directly, is make sure that we are completely buttoned down and moving very efficiently in terms of processing the appropriate documentation and federal requirements and all those things so that our students or our prospective students have those in hand as soon as they possibly can and that everything is in order. That was certainly a very big help to us for the class that came in August. That we moved very, very quickly in processing the I-20 forms, even during the period when the Department of State was on hiatus for processing visa applications. And so our students who were hoping to come to Augustana had the documentation they needed the second that process opened up, and they were able to move really quickly to get their appointments for visa clearances. So those are the kind of things we do. And certainly we also, try to create lots of ways where international students can speak with faculty and staff, can speak with each other, can kind of express their concerns or vent their concerns, whatever it may be. But it certainly is a difficult time. And that's been part of our message as well, right? There's no easy solution here. And so we want to work with everybody, but we also understand that we can't just kind of solve any of the problems in a swift or easy way.
If you're just joining us, it's the 21st Show. We're continuing our series of conversations with university leaders from across the 21st state. Today we're talking with Andrea Tolentino, the president of Augustana College in the Quad Cities. Our program's on tape, so we cannot take your calls live today, but let us know what you thought. Talk@21stshow.org is our email address. Augustana recently celebrated an anniversary, 150 years since its first class in Rock Island. It had moved there from Paxton, almost to the opposite end of the state. Tell us a little bit more about Augustana's history.
Yeah, so we started out in Chicago and then we moved to Paxton, but we were founded officially in 1860. And so then it was a pretty quick move between sort of the beginning in 1860 and eventually, settling into Rock Island in 1875. And this has been a perfect home for us. I think Rock Island really kind of suits Augustana's personality, if you will. You know, it's not a fancy place, but it's a very tough, very committed, very engaging place where people are incredibly collaborative and incredibly community driven. And I think that's a big piece of sort of what Augustana does. We were founded by Swedish Lutherans who wanted to ensure that there was a higher ed institution where folks from their community would be welcome and they could train them to be teachers and pastors and all the things that they needed to kind of maintain the things that they thought were important for community. And that ethos, I think, has continued with Augustana. We are a place that's very committed to accessibility, to welcoming, to service to community and service to others. And, like I said, I think Rock Island very much fits that kind of sense of who we are, and we do all we can to also contribute to Rock Island.
I want to share a couple of messages we got from listeners. We invited members of our texting group to submit questions or comments as they knew we were preparing for this conversation. And this one is from Julie in Bettendorf, Iowa. And it's about, this idea of town and gown, right? The relationship between colleges and the communities they're in. Julie says, I'm an Augustana alum. Within at least the last 3 years, Augie has done a great job of making their high-quality academic programs available to students with higher financial need. The current president is bringing back an effort to connect with Rock Island and the Quad Cities. Thank you for that message, Julie. Dr. Tolentino, what is Augustana doing to build and sustain that community connection?
Yeah, well, it's always nice to start with compliments, right? So thank you to Julie for that. So one of the things I've made clear since I came here is that we really are part of Rock Island, and we have to understand ourselves as part of that and as a partner with the city of Rock Island. I mean, it's certainly true across the whole Quad Cities because we are sort of four Small urban areas that are all in a very, kind of close range. We have two cities on the Illinois side and then two on the Iowa side of the Mississippi River. And then you actually, depending on who you talk to, there may actually be five because we have another one that's sort of a candidate to be included in there. So we certainly care about working with and being a good partner across all those areas, but Rock Island also holds a particular special place for us because it is the actual town that we're situated in. And so, what I've wanted to do is really work closely with the municipal leadership of the city of Rock Island to ensure that Augustana is doing its part to make Rock Island the most kind of pleasing, vital, viable place for people to live. So, this past summer, we set up a community development corporation. And the board of that community development corporation includes representatives from Augustana, from the Rock Island city government, and from local business leaders and owners around, particularly the area of the college. Our focus is on helping drive economic development as well as address housing. So one of the things Augustana is doing to really get that going is investing in purchasing some properties which are near the perimeter of the campus that we can then turn over to developers and create some nice businesses that hopefully will bring folks there, as well as housing that would be not only open, of course, to Augustana students, but would be open to any member of the community as well.
All right, we need to take a break. We'll continue our conversation in a few minutes. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us. It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're continuing our series of conversations with leaders in higher education across Illinois, given the challenges and changes for colleges and universities under the second Trump administration. Today we're hearing from Andrea Talentino, president of Augustana College in the Quad Cities. In order to make schedules meet, we taped this conversation on Wednesday, so we're not taking calls live today, but you can let us know what you thought. Our email address, talk@21stshow.org. Okay, back now to the conversation.
We've been told, we've done a lot of canvassing of people who live around the area and live in Rock Island, and everybody tells us the number one thing they want us to bring is a coffee shop. So now we say, okay, other than a coffee shop, what would you like? But we're really focused on businesses that we hope can create areas that are not transactional, that will create spaces where people want to come and stay. So you might go to the coffee shop or you might go to the cafe and there might be a small grocery store, next door that you were able to run in and get some of the things that you need. But it just creates kind of the sense of community that's important to us and we think important to Rock Island. So we're very committed to investing in that. We also, something or kind of our first project that we did 2 years ago is we built new tennis courts in the city park. The city of Rock Island leased the land to us for $1. We needed to redo our tennis courts anyway. So instead of redoing the ones that we had on campus, we built six brand new beautiful ones in the park, which are open to anyone, to the full Rock Island community. We also put pickleball lines on them because if you're going to have a community project for that, you got to have pickleball. My tennis coach wasn't super thrilled with that because he said, well, the NCAA won't like it. I said, yes, but the community will. And we're doing this in partnership with the community. So now we have just really six beautiful courts and we use them for all our NCAA competitions. And like I said, they're also open to the community. And I'm always delighted when I go by in the summer or the fall and I see, some of the senior citizen leagues and things like that using them. So that's been a great piece too. So that's something we're absolutely committed to and we will continue to build and grow as we go.
Got to have those pickleball lines. Yeah.
That's
well,
right.
So you mentioned the compliment from Julie. She did have a little more of her message that includes a concern. And she says, my top concerns for higher ed are price tag and experiential learning. I want to see more students off campus and in their field, and also more experts from the field being invited into the classroom. Price tag is more straightforward. If they can give $20,000 to many students, can't we just lower the price, $20,000, and continue to offer scholarships? Many dorm facilities are over the top nice for college kids. I think that expense has gone over the top, too. All right, thanks again, Julie. How are you thinking about those issues, Dr.
Tom? Yeah. So the experiential learning I'll take first. And I always say I appreciate concerns too, because that's what helps us get better when we hear from people about the things that are not going as well. But experiential learning is one of the three planks of our strategic plan. We want to make sure that students are out, they are doing things, they are experiencing kind of the actual challenges and possibilities of working with businesses or nonprofits or whatever it may be. We call it engaged learning. It's kind of the concept that you're getting beyond the classroom to do things where you really get your hands dirty. But that is absolutely a high priority for us. And I think it's, I mean, there's two things that are important for it. Number one, that's what's helping students be successful in the workplace when they graduate from college. So we need to do more of that. But also number two, students are telling us that's what they love doing. You know, if the choice is study for an hour to take a test or work for 4 hours out in the community somewhere with a business or, you know, shadowing someone, or they'd always do the more time out in the world where it's actually happening. And so we're very aware of that, and we're building a lot more opportunities. Well, in fact, our kind of key priority for the next year will be building a new building that is going to be our community impact center, and it will have what we're calling the Quad City Lab in it, and that will be completely dedicated to exactly this, experiential learning, working with the community in all types and forms, whether it's for-profit, not-for-profit, municipal, you name it, and students are really able to work side-by-side with folks in terms of showing how learning comes to life when you apply it in challenges, complications, whatever it may be that people are facing. On the topic of the cost of higher education, that's a more complicated one. And I understand Julia probably says, well, it's not complicated at all, charge less, right? One of the interesting things over the last decade is there have been some schools that have tried to kind of do exactly what she said, which is set their tuition rate lower and kind of reset expectations. But one of the things that we've learned, when I say we, I mean the kind of higher ed business has learned, is that I think this is true across everything. Americans love a deal. People perceive that they're getting a better deal and also a higher quality experience if they're charged more, but they get scholarship to cover that, than they do if they're charged less. And
they want that red clearance sticker.
Exactly. And it's also this sort of concept that you get what you pay for, right? So if the higher sticker price is there, then somehow it must be better. It must be more meaningful. You know, whether that's true or not, in terms of the does the perception match reality? That's something we can debate. But there's a lot of evidence that schools that tried to reset their tuition costs actually suffered over the longer term. They might have had a bump for about a year, but then it declined after that. So it is a little bit of a strange game that we play with the discounting system that's kind of in place for higher ed. But I will say one of the things, you know, I mentioned that we're very committed to access. So one of the programs we have is called Augustana Possible, and that's a program through which high-achieving, high-need students can get 100% of their need met. So that their out-of-pocket cost is zero. That does include access to federal and state grants, but it's really our commitment to students that if you're a high-achieving student, we want you to be here, and we don't want finance to be a barrier. I also want to give good props to one of our alum who has funded that generously for us through a $40 million gift that it's my job to make sure I match, so we have a total of $80 million in it. But all of that money goes to covering student tuition and fees to ensure that we can be accessible to students of all backgrounds.
A couple more text messages from listeners. Lex in Champaign says, a lot of small private liberal arts colleges have been on the ropes for decades. Lex goes on to say, the Chronicle of Higher Education has had a list of schools likely to go under for years as enrollment continues to drop, faculty are cut, and the value proposition of the schools unravels. They are always in jeopardy. Now the potential loss of federal student assistance is a bigger threat these schools face. And that, I should say, leads to a question we got from John in Rockford, who points out that dozens of public or nonprofit private colleges have closed or merged in recent years. He goes on to ask, what has Augustana College done to protect itself from what seems to be an epidemic of small liberal arts colleges being forced to close down?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I'm happy to say that we're not in danger of closing. And what I always like to tell our people is that we are in control of our destiny. We are not making decisions out of desperation. We'll never have quite as much money as we want to have, but we have enough for what we want to do. We have to use it wisely, but we have enough. So how do we get to that point? I mean, one of the things we do is that we budget out 10 years ahead. Now, that's a little bit like the weather, right? Once you get past year three, it could be hailing when you thought it was going to be sunny or vice versa. But what that does is it allows us to see trends developing really early on so that then we're able to take proactive steps and give ourselves a long runway for changing something that we might think might be unfavorable to our bottom line and doing it in a way that's consistent with our, you know, commitment to student success and student outcomes. And that's an exercise that we're always involved in, but it ensures that we're never kind of reacting to suddenly thinking, oh my gosh, we have a huge loss of money or a deficit. What do we do now? It gives us the time to kind of put things in place that we need to make ourselves strong and sustainable over time. You know, the other thing I think we do, we have low debt. We would not take on more debt unless we were certain that it would bring us revenue. Our debt will be totally paid off in 2036, and we have no intention of taking on any more debt until then or even at that point. We have a pretty strong endowment. It's not the, you know, if you compare it to some of the really wealthy schools, it's no $55 billion like Yale, but you know, we're right in the middle of the top 700 endowments across the United States, which is helpful to us because then we have a good draw from that for our operational budget each year. By order of our board of trustees, we do hold some cash on hand so that in a pandemic or something like that, we're able to cover paychecks. We're able to buy the bread and eggs and butter and things like that in the dining hall. And, you know, we make sure that we're also able through all that. You don't want to forget the people. They're your most important resource. And so we're also able to fund, you know, compensation increases and things like that each year. So we really are very thoughtful and I think very proactive. And I'll add for our community, very transparent about our budget and how we manage it. We are a tuition dependent school. So, you know, it's important to us to be able to bring in the number of students that we need each year. About 84 cents on every dollar we spend comes from student tuition or fees. But we have, you know, as I mentioned at the very beginning, our admissions folks are very strategic minded. And so they're really thoughtful about how they do that. And I think when you put all those pieces together, we've been very successful over time.
Earlier this year, you and more than 400 college and university leaders across the country, including many others in Illinois, signed on to a public statement warning about, quote, unprecedented government overreach and political interference now endangering American higher education, end quote. That was in April. 7 months later, what effect do you think the statement had?
You know, I don't know that the statement itself had a huge impact, and I certainly didn't think that it would. I do think it was considered important for sort of making our voice heard with the recognition that it was not likely to be heeded, right? And we're certainly aware that the, you know, our federal administration has an agenda that they want to pursue and things that they think are important in that. And some of those may go against what others of us think is reasonable. So in that sense, I think it was important to kind of get a statement out there, but I don't think we expected change necessarily. And, you know, I think what we've instead seen since is increasing efforts to impact some of those changes to higher ed. You know, we've been fortunate. We're a private college in a state that values higher education tremendously. And so I think we feel the impact of that a little bit less. There are certainly colleges that are in universities that are in states where the state legislature has sort of, you know, direct impact in terms of increasingly what they're able to teach, how they teach it, and you know, even to some extent, what students they bring in. It's a hard and interesting time. We're right across the river from Iowa. So my colleagues who are 5 minutes away, if they're on the Iowa side, have a very different reality than some of us over here in Illinois. And I think what everybody's trying to figure out is, how we continue to serve our missions well and serve our values well, while also being mindful of and compliant toward the new enforcement rules from the federal government. And so, you know, I think that's something we've spent a ton of time on in the last 8 months. I know many of my colleagues have as well. It's something now that you just have to be constantly aware of and sort of staying on top of. We do want to be compliant. At the same time, we also need to fulfill our mission and fulfill our values. And so we have to think carefully about how we do both those things.
We're in an era when trust in truth-seeking institutions is pretty low. That's true of higher education. It's true of scientific research organizations, government, courts, the law. How do you think about that as a leader in higher education, about rebuilding that trust writ large in American society?
Sure. Well, that's one of the things that keeps me up at night, I'll say, to be fair. You know, I think what we try to do, and there have been many, I'll backtrack for a minute. I mean, there have been many institutions and higher ed leaders who sort of tried to focus on the statistics. And there's a lot of statistics that show why getting a college degree is beneficial to later life and where you're able to succeed. But I think the larger point is what you're really focusing on. It's not just kind of what the outcomes are, but it's also the expectation of what happens when you're on campus. Are different viewpoints heard? Is it a place where people feel that, you know, they can be who they are, a whole variety of things? And it's not easy to create trust in a whole landscape much larger than higher ed where there isn't a lot of trust. And so I think what we focus on doing is when we're bringing people to campus and when we have prospective students, showing them the value of being here and what sort of community this is. I mean, I think we trade on that a lot, that this isn't just a place to get an education, it's a community. And we have a lot of evidence of that being true. I mean, if you talk to an Augustana alum, it doesn't matter if they graduated in like 1970 or if they graduated in 2025. I would tell you the odds are very high that they probably are on a text chain with their friends from college every single day, which amazes me. My alma mater didn't kind of create such close connections and close-knit, you know, sort of relationships as a place like Augustana does. So I think, you know, we can't, and I've said this many times to my senior leaders here, we can't solve the whole problem of trust in the United States. What we can do is show people the value of being at a place like Augustana and making the connections and building the trust with each other and with us that they have here. And if we can start to do that, and if other institutions can start to do that, then I hope over time that that can impact our you know, kind of larger national landscape. But I don't think there's any institution, even the largest or kind of most elite ones, who's going to be able to turn the tide of kind of where we are now. We didn't get here in a day, right? This has been a couple decades of kind of declining trust. I'm a political scientist by training. So I kind of look at this at the macro level. And what we can do is in our small incremental way, we can make inroads in that kind of one person, one family at a time. And if we can all do that, then we can knit together some changes in society. But it's going to come that way rather than some top-down sort of change.
Andrea Talentino is the 9th president of Augustana College in Rock Island. She served in that role since 2022. Dr. Talentino, thanks for sharing your perspectives with us today on The 21st Show.
Thanks so much for having me.
More to come on The 21st Show. Stay with us.
Support for The 21st Show comes from listeners like you and the Des Moines Arts Center, located in Iowa's capital city, featuring works by regional, national, and international artists of the 20th and 21st centuries. Details are at DesMoinesArtsCenter.org.